and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're joined by myself, Barney, and this week we have, I'm going to call you guys Long Ball Football veterans, Patrick and Kevin. How are you doing, guys? Kevin, you all right?
I've got a complaint to make to the directors of this podcast because it seems like every time I'm on, Sporting has just lost points. So I don't know who's deciding this, but yeah. Good as always. I'm sure there's enough to say about what's gone on recently.
I think we've got good form for getting people on when their team's lost. I think, I think Andrew's been on a few times when Porto have struggled. But wait, we'll get stuck into that seven. Patrick, are you okay? How are things?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Obviously, as Kevin mentioned, a bit disappointed with the Sporting result. I'm going to have to check the history now. Like every time I featured, what was the result before that?
Yeah.
I might come into my thinking next time I agree to come on. If it's a big game, I'll be like, do you know what? Maybe next week.
Yeah, the long ball football curse has been mentioned a few times. But yeah, I'm not sure if it's that legit. We'll see. Right, before we get stuck in, I will mention, as always, our Patreon. We've got for just £1 a month, if you guys enjoy what we do, you can become a Patreon member for, just £1. We usually try and get out an extra podcast a week with me and Albert. And there's obviously the Predictions League, and I think there's a fantasy team competition as well, and there's some prizes usually. So yeah, to just £1, just make sure you get on that. But I'm keen to get straight into it, guys, because this was a big weekend of games, both at both ends of the table actually. Porto hosted Benfica, while Sporting hosted Braga. Both games, well, could potentially decide the title race and the race for third place, which I think might be tighter than some people might think. But let's start with the Clásico match, which maybe didn't feel as poignant as it usually does. Porto are improving, but aren't at the level that Benfica are and Sporting are currently. And Benfica, however, now top of the table, and due to the rescheduled games, it feels like this podcast really hasn't praised them enough under Lage. Patrick, Pavlidis scored within the first minute, and that just set the tone of the rest of the game. I think it was a dream start for Benfica. And I thought they managed the game really well after that. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, exactly. Like coming into the game, I was wondering, Derek, when you think you probably scored too soon, I wonder whether that effect might creep into Benfica. But, even when you look on form and stuff like that, Benfica were the informed team in comparison to Porto. So I think them scoring first was really important. They obviously had a moment after it where they had to ride a wave in terms of a response from Porto. But Porto never really managed to do quite enough to hurt Benfica. And every time Benfica actually tried it and tried break lines, they did with success. The outside centre-backs, Noem Perez and Marcano, they had a tough, tough day out there. I wouldn't say straightforward because I feel like that's quite disrespectful, but it was super well executed from Benfica, I would say.
Yeah, I'm glad you highlighted those players because I think there was issues with that back line and they just seemed to have a tough time. I will come to Porto, but I wanted to speak to you, Kevin, about Pavlidis, who has been on a bit of a journey since he's arrived in Portugal. I think it was in the pre-season, he scored a few goals and then he struggled. And I remember we did a Christmas quiz and I had an XG round, and out of the whole league, he was the player at the time who was underperforming against his XG the most. And we had a little bit of a laugh about it at the time, but I perhaps the data was suggesting that the goals were going to come, and boy, have they. And in particular, the big games, right? I think that's what's stood out recently is, he stood out in this Benfica team. He's got some big goals and some big games.
Yeah, Pavlidis, at the end of the day, he's always been a consistent performer. His work off the ball, where he contributes to the front line as a whole, has always been very solid, very positive for Benfica. So it's always a matter of, can he finally show that clinical side to his game? Because there's a coming a time where Doucouré, which actually kind of ironically, he had one of his most complete performances on a night where he didn't contribute directly to the score sheet as he did earlier on in the season, perhaps. But it was a fact of, if the other Benfica players can make up those goals, those direct contributions, Pavlidis' overall performances were more than sufficient. And it was kind of overshadowing what how good of a player he actually is. And perhaps being that the closest that Benfica have had to a replacement of Gonçalo Ramos as possible. And this fusion now, where he's finally getting the rub of the green in front of the goal, is no less than what he deserves overall. And yeah, he's definitely deserving of this very good moment where, if anything, now the goals are overshadowing everything else he does for the team. So it's kind of come full circle. Yeah, always a threat. He always got into the right areas, which, as much as it seems as a cliche, it's a good thing for a striker to do, even when it's not coming off in front of goal.
And do you think, because I think, yeah, his work rate has always been there. Do you think Lage has now sort of found his team and is quite settled, isn't it? I think you look at the back four with Araújo filling at right back, the midfield three of Alcaraz, Florentino and Koscielny, and then, you know, Di Maria back for this game. And it's quite a strong team. I don't know if you, I think I've questioned at points since Lage has taken over whether he's getting the best out of these players, but I don't know if you agree. I think the results are starting to come in now, and I think Lage has sort of proven himself.
Yeah, but Lage kind of built a reputation for himself as sort of a purple patch manager. That immediate impact straight after coming in, kind of readjusting things to his system in a way that makes players feel more comfortable immediately after. I don't think there's been great tactical evolution of the side from when he's first come in. I don't think that they've resolved many issues. For example, on a transition, defending transition, they're still quite poor. We've seen lackluster moments, kind of passive moments from that defense, playing even Feirense, which aren't a team that should be troubling Benfica in any sort of way at this stage in the season, to be perfectly honest with you. But one thing that Lage does very well is that he sets up matches very well. He's very pragmatic in that sense. You'll never get the sense that Benfica will come into a game and be immediately outclassed. That's quite rare. So I think, regardless of that goal, which was a dream start for Benfica, obviously, I think that the plan was always what they carried on to do beyond that. Porto taking charge of the ball, probably you could say were controlling, but I don't know if that's 100% what how Benfica would have saw that, because as soon as the ball got fizzed into those wide areas, which was their intention, they packed out the central zones. The trigger was to press when the ball went wide to Francisco Moura or to João Mário, who, look, they're quite direct players. They're not the most dynamic. They're not like Martin Fernandes, who has a lot more to his arsenal in terms of build-up. And Porto, the story of their season has been that they're very erratic. Those players, whether in front of goal, players like Pepe and even Samuel, they're very erratic. And it showed that sort of side to them. And Benfica did force that out of them. So as much as I think there's a lot of this result that can be attributed to Porto being poor, and that's on them, Benfica, they have all the merit in how they seem to be forcing these sorts of attitudes out of the opposition players, forcing those sort of mistakes. And at the end of the day, Lage has merit in the way that he sets up his team. Could he use players like Sheldrup more often? I think that Benfica could not lose by having that option on the bench and it being utilised in a better way, a bit more consistently. His impact was great when he came in January, but it does seem like Bruno Lage has his preference. His mind is made up. He had that little trial with Sheldrup. He's dropped back out of the team. And I wouldn't expect the last lineups to vary much more than what we saw on this Sunday.
Yeah, I thought Artukoglu, yeah, was really good in this game, like back to his best, and I think for me, he's got a start ahead of Sheldrup. I think you described it well, the way they sort of could almost soak up a bit of pressure from Porto and possession, and you know, as Patrick mentioned, hit them on the break and attack Perez, attack Meccano, and that happened quite a few times. Yeah, for me, Patrick, I think, you know, I've enjoyed Eustáquio coming into the back line for Porto. I do have questions about whether a figure like him in that back three, if maybe one or the two of these goals could be attributed to his presence there, or slash, you know, I don't know. I always think about communication within the back line. Where do you see this Porto team ending this season? Because yeah, I feel like Anselmi's found the team out of the squad he's got. Obviously, that squad's going to change in the summer, but there's a long way to go. And it feels like, we're going to talk about the Braga result in a bit. There's still quite a bit to do. And I think this game was, sort of really showed their frailties, I guess you could say.
It'll be interesting. You'd like to think, just reading through the players that they have, like they do have that advantage in terms of quality, and they will see it through and at least secure third place for themselves. But it'll be quite interesting to see also the impact that a defeat like that sort of has on this Porto team, especially losing 4-1 the first time as well against Benfica. It can quite easily just sparked out in the players and in terms of how good they actually are in terms of the direction that the team and the squad is going. For me personally, I always worry when, for example, a club president or an owner or a chairman is having to come out publicly and back a manager. I feel like when they do that, it's like it smells trouble. And with André Villas-Boas having to do that again this week for Anselmi, to me it just tells me that okay, like we've hit the stage now where you can't just sweep whispers under the rug, like something is going on. And I don't know, I'm very 50-50 on the direction that Porto are going at the moment with the new manager. And as you say, like you'd like to think that he gets to see out the season and then revamp the squads, and hopefully for himself he gets the results to back that and finish third. But it's just tricky. I see Porto as a team that's in transition quite clearly. They've got a new president and everything. They've seen Sporting and Benfica gallop away for much of the season really, and leave them behind. It was a similar situation last season as well at times, and I think for Porto it's kind of like a new reality for them. Like they're not used to having a spell like this. This isn't really a Porto season if we're brutally honest, and that's naturally going to be very difficult for pockets of the fans or even senior management within the team, players. It's going to be difficult for them to accept that. And yeah, let's see how they manage that, because there will be some people that would just be willing to accept that it is what it is. It's a transition phase. We could get third. It's not a disaster if we get fourth, or it is a disaster if you get fourth. And even if you get third, it's embarrassing because you should be aiming to win the league every single season. I think it really depends how they accept the realities of the situation that they're in. For sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think I look at some of the players. And Kevin mentioned him as well. Pepe, just so erratic in his performances. And when you look at, I guess, to compare him to the Benfica wingers that they've got, even Shoulderup, who was on the bench, it just feels like, I don't know. I feel like the squad quality is massively dropped for Porto, and it's going to be a. I think it's going to be a tough rebuild. I mean, this result has put them down to fourth, 1 point behind Braga. And I suppose we better come to that game. Benfica sit top thanks to an Afonso Patrão goal. The Braga B team striker coming on against Sporting, having played just 90 minutes of top-tier football before this game, and heading home a late equaliser for Braga. This was, having seen the Benfica result and then this coming in, this was, I don't know, this if. It feels quite significant. Kevin, I mean, Sporting were the more dangerous team in this game. Gyökeres causing all sorts of problems. Quenda with a few chances as well. But Braga held firm and they got the points. Tell me how you saw this game, and what were the problems for Sporting?
Well, I think it's kind of the story of Højbjerg at Sporting, really. Going 1-0 up and then trying to survive the rest of the time, not having any sort of ambition to grab hold of the game, see it out in a different way with some sort of control, It's giving full initiative to the opposition, and Braga, credit where it is due. They took that initiative, they pushed Sporting back. But as the team at home, as the title contenders, you would expect Sporting to have a little bit more about them, to for the manager to show a little bit more ambition, a bit more of a pragmatic nature, and try something to weather that storm, not just, okay, this is what it is. Let's see how long we can hold on to it for this lead and hope that there isn't a lapse in concentration and it doesn't slip in that way. But once again, for the eighth time in the season for Højbjerg between Vitória and Sporting, he's let a lead slip. He's been an advantage in a game and he's let it slip. And there hasn't been many games this season where Sporting have ended up with less possession than their opposition, but they've all been under Højbjerg, including a game against Casapia, including a game against Estoril. If that doesn't really spell the picture for people, I'm not sure what will. And I'm not trying to go on a Højbjerg hate spree at the moment, but the fact of the matter is Sporting seem to have got in a glorified interim because this approach is completely results-based. It's obsessed with just grinding out a result, trying to survive until the end of the season. The conditions are difficult with all of the injuries. That is absolutely true, but it does not explain the inactivity on the bench. It does not excuse the fact that Højbjerg isn't even comfortable with what he's doing. He came in with that 4-4-2, kind of 4-3-3 hybrid, if you want to say it, and he reverted back to the Elmarine system, we'll call it, that three back, because it suited the personnel, the limited personnel he had available. But since then, he's not reverted back. And since then, you've seen him a lot less comfortable even in press conferences. You've seen him a lot more on the defensive. And it seems like it's a little bit, and obviously, it's a little bit of a comparison. It doesn't explain a full picture. It might be taken out of context a little bit, but it seems a little bit like João Pereira syndrome, where João Pereira comes up. He has his personality, but he really puts it aside because of what he thinks is best for the team. But by that, all personality is lost and everyone suffers from it. And it seems like Sporting are going in that direction because I saw more ambition. I saw a better side playing better football for longer periods of the game in his first match where he had one training session where he can't put his ideas across. And that was in the derby. And obviously, the psychological effect at that point might be different. But it concerns me long term for Sporting and even short term because it's not a sustainable approach. And we see by the fact that Sporting score and immediately drop their lines back. And it's not in a way where you could say, okay, they're going to absorb pressure and play on the counter entirely. It's not really that because you can see the two elements at the front. You've got those banks 4-4-2. The two banks of four are far apart from the two at the front. So it's not even sustainable to absorb that pressure. It's not a cohesive unit. And seen by the goal that, for me, Maxi, Edouard Diomande, all sort of at fault just for passive approaches to it. I'll let Patrick after extend a little bit more on it. But I think that's it kind of shows exactly what the issue is. Kind of just weathering a storm, seeing if it's enough to get to the end. But it doesn't look like that's how it works in football, I'm afraid. So it's going to be a lot of suffering until the end of the season. And Sporting suffered. They suffered the consequences of their own actions, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, I will come to you, Patrick, because that Petrão goal for Braga, it did seem, I was quite shocked about how much space he had, and it wasn't a clean header, but it bounced quite nicely into the goal. Quaresma and Diomande sort of scrambling, yeah, a bit sloppy basically, and that's not really what you should be thinking about when you see those names in that back line. Yeah, talk to me about how you felt this game went, and yeah. Just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean the goal itself in terms of how it went in and all that. I'm not sure how much of it you can attribute to the manager because we're talking about professionals and in terms of marking your zone and being aware of your surroundings. I think too many of them sort of facilitated the situation a little bit for Braga. But in general, like, I'd have to agree with Kevin as well that 1-0 is a very dangerous advantage to hold on to. And we put ourselves in a position where, quite literally, we're inviting Braga onto us. And so when you're leading 1-0 in the final stages of the game, you sort of open yourself up to a possibility such as a cross coming in and stuff like that. So it didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense in addition with the substitutions that you made. I was really disappointed from the moment where he did make the substitutions. Because, with all that being said, I did think the midfield was more or less stable. Heumann and De Bast were controlling things, even if they didn't have the large bulk of possession. They were controlling things quite well in the middle. I think you bring in a young kid in a nervy game, and I think he really showed that he's not quite ready for a situation like that, a scenario like that. At the same time, I was disappointed to see Jenny leave and be subbed, because I did think for large parts of that game that he was, like, probably alongside Gyökeres, Sporting's best player. He was burning through lines, carrying the ball. And if you set yourself up to play on the counter like he did in the latter stages, that pace, that trickery, that directness is so useful. I don't understand why he decided to let Jenny go and bring in, I think, Maxi was who replaced him directly. And yeah, I think just from that perspective, I think you everyone's entitled to be very disappointed with the manager himself. I will cut him a slight bit of slack as well, because I guess in a situation like that, if you put yourself in his shoes, you're winning 1-0 against fourth place, a very good side in Braga. But, like, if you also don't defend, or if you keep going chasing the second, and all of a sudden you concede, you're also going to get hit with a book. So it's football. It's football. But no, in general, like, I would be dis I felt disappointed with the manager, more so with the substitutions and the scenario that he sort of enabled than anything else.
Well, I'm glad you described Braga as a very good team there, Patrick, because I think on last week's pod, both Albert and Andrew were a little down on Braga and Carvajal. I feel a little bit more optimistic about them. I think Rasic has been a great winter signing. Zalazar coming back in the team is almost like a new signing, and even the young Tsumba at left back has been excellent. And I think you can say with Rasic and Tsumba, those were real problem positions for Braga, but now the team looks, I think, pretty good. Kevin, can you see them pipping Porto to third spot? Are you as optimistic as me?
I'd make them personal favourites, if anything, just based off their current moments. You're in the run into the season, anything could happen. Never say never to Porto. Obviously, their club stature and whatnot. And they do have a lot of quality. It just takes a few of those erratic players to come into their moment of form at the right time. But Braga do look very good. They probably look like one of the better sides in 2025 overall. The results would suggest that, at least, and is huge credit to Carvajal overall, because he's kind of revolutionized Braga. Because I think previously, at least, it seemed like there was a little bit of a sour taste when he came back, the way that the former manager left, maybe feeling that because of the way that the defense is, it they were seen to have a very, very poor defense at the start of the season, a little bit more stable now with the entry of Tsumba, which was a great addition. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of optimism towards Braga at certain stages of the season. But I wouldn't say that's the case now, because even with in-house solutions, the presence of Gorbi at sometimes, Tsumba, as we've already mentioned, Beltran with that goal, and he's not even really making huge waves at B team level. It just shows that Carvajal is a very underrated manager. He is that sort of transitional manager that Braga would need, at least to grind out the rest of the season. And he introduces youth very well. He always has. He did so in his last spell. So yeah, I'm optimistic they can grab third spot. I think it's going to be a very good fight until the end of the season. And I'm looking forward to them next season because they've already cemented the signing of Lille from Casapia. That's going to be a great addition to their squad. There were reports saying that they were going after Malheiro, who was formerly of Boa Vista. That's, again, a very good signing. Obviously, very offensively capable fullbacks, but I'd say a little bit more responsible than the likes of Adrian Marin, which we've seen in the past, which was a slight liability, we could say, at the very least. Yeah, but things look a lot better all of a sudden for Braga. I get the sort of pessimism because I think we've come to expect Braga to really kick on and be battling not only with third, but with second as well and first, at least for short periods of the season. But they're in the race and they don't finish third every season. So even if Porto do look very much below the mark, Braga doing their thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm quite up on Braga at the moment. I think they're going to finish third the way they're playing, and I feel like there's a couple of players come back in, isn't it? Roger Fernandez is out injured. I'm not sure if he'll make it at the end of the season, but the squad's there to improve. Gentlemen, I will, before we move on to the next game, I just wanted to talk about this weekend being Benfica winning and Sporting drawing, dropping points. I just wanted to look at the run-ins and just to gauge your confidence on. Well, your team finishing top, hopefully. Sporting have got Santa Clara, Moreirense, Rio Ave, Gil Vicente, and then the last two games, Benfica and Vitória. Whereas Benfica's last six games are Arouca, Vitória, AVS, Estoril, Sporting, and then Braga. So a couple of tricky games for both those teams. Obviously, the Benfica Sporting game will be potentially quite pivotal, but. Patrick, how are you feeling? Do you think there's enough in that for you to maybe clinch it?
Yeah, for sure. I think that a team like Sporting has to look at that, and especially with everything that's at stake, they have to look at that and think, right, the situation we're in, we have to win every single game. And especially that Benfica one, if you can charge up your form and go into that game and make it a must-win game and a game where you can win, then that's practically almost everything you need to do. I think they're both challenging run-ins. Both teams have very difficult games, both leading up to the big derby and straight after in the final game of the season. So it could definitely be popcorn time come last two games of the season. At least for the neutral, we can hope for that as well, not just the Sporting and Benfica fans. It was as disappointing as Monday night was to throw away a lead against Braga and all of a sudden drop below Benfica for the first time in a while. There is still hope. There's still a lot of football to be played. You have to take focus into that as well because off the back of a disappointing result like that, all of a sudden, if you take that into another game, next game where your mentality is probably a little bit more fragile, and then you could be saying, okay, it might be all over at that point. So it'll be interesting to see how Sporting respond. I think they've got strong mentalities in the dressing room and what have you. So I'd be expecting a big response. I think both teams would be comfortable and confident that they can do what they need to do. Essentially, you just got to win all your games.
Yeah, as you do in this league, that's the most important thing. All right, well, let's move a little bit further down the table. Vitória beat fellow fifth place rivals Santa Clara, closing the gap to just 1 point between the two. This was a huge game for Luis Fria's men, having lost 1-0 in the reverse fixture back in October. João Mendes got them off to the perfect start, but they had to rely on a few outstanding Bruno Varela saves to keep them ahead before Gustavo Silva sealed the win right before the end. This feels like a big win for Luis Freire, who I would say has been, well, let's say he's had a quite an average start to his time at Vitória. What do you think, Kevin? I don't know. It felt like a significant moment for this Vitória team.
Yeah, I mean, Obviously, Santa Clara still have that point of advantage over Vittoria in that sort of race for fifth place. Best of the rest, if you want to call it that, which Vittoria have become kind of synonymous with. But yeah, it's definitely I think it's a big statement win, just in the matter of how it happened as well. I think it showed that Santa Clara, for all their quality this season, for very good results, for how plucky of a side they've become, they're not totally comfortable playing toe to toe with the big boys at the end of the day. Obviously, Vittoria did have that sort of very good start, the goal by Rominge in the first few minutes. But even then, Santa Clara took control a few portions of the game. They did create a few chances, but it just seems that a lot more comfortable playing that sort of low block, sort of similar to what Nottingham Forest are doing in the Premier League, playing their sort of game and not getting attracted into a game where it's really 50-50 and dividing possession, all of that. So I think it's kind of a statement of intent looking forward, seeing that Santa Clara, as much as they could replicate a sort of season like this one, they probably won't be able to evolve much further, not with these sorts of players, not with the manager and this style particularly. As for Luis Freire, I can definitely see room to grow at Vitória. The academy is being used a lot. They've reaped the benefits of that for a couple of seasons now. Names from Miguel Maga to whoever you want to name, really. Tomáš Endel, which he had another great game, one of the underrated midfielders in the league by far, but not as much as Thiago Silva. He's definitely the unsung hero of this team and has been a whole season. How he pulls strings in midfield is absolutely ridiculous. Another perhaps man of the match performance, if not looking at goal scorers and all of that, and not looking at Bruno Varela, which he finally had a very good performance, which it seems like he's very up and down this season. There's another good one for him, which is nice to see after all of that drama in that game with Boavista, the unfortunate events, which we never like to see. It's nice to see him bounce back with some big contributions. And yeah, for Vitória, I think looking forward, there's a lot of potential in that project. They obviously have assets to sell for big money. They have been starting to do that. Improving the financial situation at the club, which wasn't as positive for a while. And Luis Freire, he always looked like a manager who he obviously did a lot with Rio Ave in very difficult situations, not being able to spend any money, reinforcing the transfer market. And at Vitória, he's definitely got a lot more to work with, perhaps taking a little bit of time to settle in. But looking forward, there's a lot of potential there. 100%.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you. Well, I find Vitória's squad situation really interesting because I think you're right. They have been using the youth academy well, although they've sold a couple of those assets recently. And then you have players like I wanted to highlight João Mendes because he scores again and he's been an incredible signing for Vitória, and certainly not one that I anticipated to be so as vital as he has been, because he scored some important goals in some important games, and he fits this bracket of player who I feel like won't make another step up from Vitória, if you see what I mean, but is still top draw compared to the rest of the league. I wonder if you could include Silva in that, if you see what I mean, although he might get a move abroad.
Probably. It's like you've got that Braga tier where it's just like, that's a Braga player. I feel like Vitória are kind of making their name and they've got Vitória players as well.
And I quite like that. Even like Berevkic, for example, and Varela in goal. I feel like that they're going to stay there. But I wanted to ask you, Patrick, about if there's any other players in this squad that you has caught your eye. I thought Relvas had a great game in this one. I think Maga's been improving recently. Who had a sort of a fluctuating. He came out of the blocks really fast when he first came to the team, and then he went a bit quiet, and now he's back. But yeah, is there any other players in this Victoria team that have caught your eye this season?
Not to be fair, I think the players that you mentioned are exactly the ones that I have been a fan of for much of the season and even throughout this game. I think Kevin mentioned that Varela's had an up and down season, but in that game, really crucial for what Vidalia were trying to do in securing that win. And yeah, Thiago Silva, Tomás Jandel, real quality players. I like the term of a Vitória player, that bracket where you kind of like, if it's like a, it's like the typical big fish small pond type of situation, but if all of a sudden if you balloon yourself up to a Porto Sporting Benfica, it's kind of like you're just another player. I like the role that they have in that sort of dynamic. And you know, when you talk about Vitória now being a selling club and they, how they've sold quite well in recent windows. You know, part of me does kind of like hope that they do hold on to one or two players for a little bit longer. Same with Braga, because you want to see the league be more competitive. Like we have the situation with Braga now, like rubbing shoulders with Porto. You want to see that happen, and you want to see the title races turn into a three-way title race or a four-horse race or even. But you know, the financial reality of Portuguese football is that when the time comes, you have to sell these sorts of players. But it does always make me wonder, like just what could a Vitória like really strive for if they just held on to key players such as those for just that little bit longer, just an extra year or so, and yeah.
Yeah, I do want to talk a little bit about Santa Clara because I feel like they have plateaued since New Year, and maybe we shouldn't take away from the amazing job that Vasco Matos has done and the fact that they managed to keep him as well despite interest from Brazil. They still have Sporting and Braga to play before the end of the season, whereas Vitória have Sporting and Benfica to play. So similar run-ins to discussing with the big teams, but so it will be a tough run, but they still could remain fifth. What do you see that, Patrick, or do you think they've they're on a sort of downward.
To be fair, I really can't call it. I really can't call it. I think if we're looking at the weekend, I think Vitória were the better side and they should have been there at home. If we're being honest, I do think Vitória has more quality in their squad compared to Santa Clara. But on the balance of things and looking throughout the whole season, and I mean, I know last time I was on the podcast, we were talking about Santa Clara in quite a bit of detail, and just how we were wondering how far they could go. You know, and here we are, six games from the end of the season, and they are still a point ahead of Vitória. So, even if they've dipped a bit of late, you know, you have to look at what's on record, and if they were to bounce back up all of a sudden, you know, you can bounce back up at any point. I think they can do it. I think they can do it. I think they. It's a similar situation to Sporting and Benfica. They've both got equally difficult and challenging fixtures, and even at this point, it's very hard to actually find a comfortable fixture because everyone everywhere has their own goals and it's crunch time. You might think, "Oh, I'm going to play Boa Vista the weekend," but all of a sudden, they need points. It's a real free for all at a certain stages. Obviously, you could play a mid-table team that knows they're not going to do anything. They're not going to go down. They're not going to fight for Europe. It's a bit of a dead rubber for them. Yeah, I think in general, both sets of fixtures look very difficult. And I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Santa Clara managed to just hold on to fifth place, and that would be a very special season for them for sure. If they manage to do that, I think it has been already.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if we're being honest, we're probably not expecting them to be top five or top six. So yeah, they can definitely look on this season with good eyes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Boa Vista and that looking for points because that's the next game we're going to come on to. So a big result at the bottom for Boa Vista as they beat Rio Ave 2-0 on Monday night, having sacked Lito Vendigal on the Sunday and promoting Jorge Couto to interim manager. The change of coach had an immediate effect, the winning 2-0. They're on 18 points now, the same as Friends, and are 5 points away off the relegation playoff with six games remaining. Some said it couldn't be done, Kevin. I said it could. I'm still feeling that it might not be the last we've heard of Burmester. Am I being a bit ridiculous or?
So they could have, could they? Surely, surely, man, surely. I mean, I look at their team. I look at their team, and we were talking. I think the last time I came onto the podcast, I made the point. They had at starting at right back. They had a sub from Bahrain, the district leagues. Like, it's a little bit different to having like Diaby, who was at Sporting. I'm looking at the lineup now. Kurzawa, he was at PSG. Vlahovic, he won the Europa League. Like, it's a little bit different. And you gave several, okay, rotting, dusty Ferraris, but you gave them to someone who hasn't got a license in that sense. To be kind to Leeds Vidigal, he doesn't really have the CV. He had the courage to take over the project. I'll give him that one. I don't think anyone would have taken this sinking ship in that manner, but yeah, it went as well as we all expected, really. Rate the guy, don't really rate the manager. But yeah, I mean, they don't have an awful squad at the moment if you look at it on paper. It kind of looks like a Portuguese league rundown version of QPR all of those years ago when they just threw money at retiring players. But look, you have tried breaking the door down. They couldn't do for most of the game. Boavista with very few chances, they go up the other side twice and they got the result. And they don't need that to happen too many more times because if we're perfectly honest about the standard at the moment at the bottom of the table, it looks pretty certain that it's kind of a situation like in the Premier League. AVS and Ferenc, aka like Ipswich and Southampton, it looks like bottom three, they're not really going to switch. And although the points are a little bit more similar in this certain context, I don't see AVS or Ferenc or Boavista escaping at least the playoff. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if they push AVS come the near the season. I wouldn't be too surprised if Ferenc do, because it seems like these three teams, they're getting a lot closer in recent times to grinding out a result. As to at the start of the season, maybe the score lines weren't as convincing, but God, was the football drab, and the chances they were conceding, the big three at least, or the big, we'll say Benfica and Sporting at this point, because Porto were always looked like a level below. They were creating chances for fun, and it's a very poor standard at the bottom of the league. So with all of this criticism and kind of being very pessimistic about the standard of the league, I'm going to be optimistic about Boavista's chances because I don't see why they can't see that it is possible and they actually kick on with this sort of result. It is very possible.
Yeah, I like to think it is. I think the squad is interesting. I think we've seen moments from some of the players come in. Van Ginkel didn't start in this game, interestingly, and I thought he's
Another
shown
one.
a bit of class when he has played. Although his fitness may be questionable, but he was out of the squad because of Vukotic, one of the goal scorers. And I wanted to highlight Vukotic because there's a few players in this squad who. They don't have to hang around. Surely Vukotic used to be at Benfica, didn't he? And then and suddenly, he's in this. He's been around for a few years now. Look at Seba Perez as well, who I'm sure could have got a move. I can't remember if he was rumored to have moved away to Saudi Arabia at some point. But there's a few players who have hung about this Boavista team, stuck through all the troubles that they've gone through over the past few years, and could potentially get them out of this sticky situation. Keep them up. It would be absolutely incredible. I'm really believing it. I did want to talk about the other side though, and with Petit Riorav. Petit, obviously the old Boavista manager, and this would be quite an embarrassing defeat for him, really, because he left Boavista knowing the situation they were in, and arrived at Riorav through a much more in a much more fruitful situation with their financial backing from the Nottingham Forest owner. So yeah, Patrick, did you? I wonder if, I think this might be quite an embarrassing defeat for Petit, and I'm starting to wonder if we'll see him at Rio Ave next season.
Yeah, I mean, within an ambitious project such as Rio Ave, I mentioned this just the other day when Sporting played them in the cup, and I was just looking at player names in there that you got Richards, you got Panzo, like is it Clayton up top. This is a really good team. Like there's good players and good names. There, and I think with the backing that they've got from the Forest owner, that whole network, there's prospect for even more players to come through, and for things just to feel like really exciting at the club. And then I thought, you've got this whole creation cooking up, bubbling up, and the manager is Petit, who if Kevin was on about Leeds Vidigal, I feel like Petit is of the same standard, of the same level. He kind of like every season he has a new club that he just picks up, and the football is very pragmatic, to put it politely. I just don't know whether the two projects marry each other well, and it won't take many like results such as this weekend's. For an ambitious project such as Rio Ave to eventually be like, you know what, you're not the guy for us. So yeah, I don't know when that will happen.
And sorry, I just raised my eyebrows because I've just seen it's is that five losses on the bounce now?
I
I think.
was going to say, yeah, that's their fifth straight in all competitions. So this can go either one of two ways. We can say that Luis Ferreira was definitely doing a good job, although it looked a little bit more shaky this season. We can see that Petit seems to be another one where he does a lot with very little, grinding out results in that sort of sense. But when it's time to have a little bit more ambition on the football pitch, that's not his game. Like, I'll have a lot of sympathy for the situation that he stuck it out with for a long time. From the moment he jumped ship, I think that showed a lot, really. It's showing a lot what of its true value. It's very much like even Sealers, if we go back to the days of Bielsa, very much results, grind it out, and not much else really.
And I think I remember it was they lost to Casapia a couple of weeks ago, and I remember sort of talking about that result and how the team he put out wasn't his strongest team. He was missing key players. This lineup against Boavista is arguably Rio Ave's strongest, right? You've got Clayton up top, you've got Aguilera, you've got Tinkmas in midfield.
Thiago Moraes, another one,
Yeah. So
looked impressive.
this is a team who should easily be beating Boavista, considering the state they're in. So. Yeah, this is quite a bad result. I do wonder what they're going to do next season because yeah, or it might even happen before then. Who knows? But although they haven't really got anything to fight for, but a huge win for Burbage. That's the thing I want everyone to take away from this and get behind me. I think I can't remember how much I bet Albert that they'd stay up, but I'm really hoping that comes in.
So Albert's not here, so you've just decided to run your propaganda in his absence.
Basically. All right, gents. Well, look, I think we're going to leave it there for this week. It's obviously a big weekend. I appreciate your time. Great to talk to you, as always. If anybody wants us to leave a little review on Apple Podcasts or share it with a friend, that's always greatly appreciated. And you can find both Patrick and Kevin's work on Twitter, or you do a lot for Portugal.net as well. So, yeah, find them on there. So, that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.